It's Thursday, August 6th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Today is August 6th, 2009, and that means it is the, 64th anniversary of the first atomic attack on human beings on this planet. That's right, we dropped the nuclear bomb on Hiroshima, Japan, back in 1944, and then 2 days later, a nuclear bomb on Nagasaki, Japan, killing hundreds of thousands of people and bringing World War II to an end. It's always something I think about. In high school, I was in drama, and in a school play, I played Harry Truman in the play Give 'Em Hell, Harry, where he had to make that fateful decision to drop the nuclear weapons. Don't want to get into too much of a discussion of it. Just want to say that I prefer hookahs and bongs to nuclear bombs. What time is that? Lots of activities on the normal calendar of events for this weekend. Of course, I'm traveling to Boise this weekend and will be appearing at the Boise Flying Pie Pizza at 4 p.m. Mountain Time to help people in Idaho get organized for a Boise Normal. Coming up tomorrow, Friday, the Dancing in the Streets Festival begins in Denver, Colorado at 26th and Welton Streets. Our Mile High Normal will be out there. The Blazed and Confused Tour makes its way to Festival Pier at Penn's Landing, 6 p.m. Eastern Time in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philly Normal will be there with their booth. Cannabis Common Sense TV show will be on Ustream.tv at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. You can check that out, coming at you live from Portland, Oregon. And over the weekend, we've got the Michigan Medical Marijuana Expo. You can learn more about that at mmmexpo2009.org. The Dancing in the Streets Festival will continue on Saturday. And also, Salt Lake City Normal will be tabling at the Vans Warped Tour at the Utah State Fair Park, 155 North, 1000 West in Salt Lake City. The Quarry Reggae Fest will be going on in Garrettsville, Ohio. Our North Ohio Normal chapter will be tabling there. And Upper Peninsula Normal is helping to get patients registered in Michigan at the North Bluff Chiropractic Center in Gladstone. For information on all of these events, check out normal.org/calendar. You just have to click on the event to get more information, including a Google map that will get you there. And if you'd like your events to appear on the National Normal Calendar of Events, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll help you get your calendar set up.
It's a normal shout-out.
In our shout-outs today, I just want to make a general shout-out to people out there who are supportive of Normal and our mission, but are in a situation where they can't actually be leaders or public in the marijuana movement. That's okay. We're fighting for people just like you. Send me an email at stash@normal.org and tell me where you're at, city and state, and I'll hook you up with a local Normal chapter. You don't have to be public. Normal never releases the membership roles of the people who have joined Normal, only the boards of directors of our local Normals. So if you can't be a leader, that's okay. We can still use your volunteerism. We can still use your donations. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, and we take a look at the federal government issuing an official request for pot growers. Check that out. New studies out are questioning whether or not marijuana maintenance is an effective treatment for alcoholism. Philips debuts a new portable roadside testing device that can allegedly detect marijuana use within 90 seconds. And Charles Rogers, the former wide receiver of the Detroit Lions, comes out on ESPN saying he smoked marijuana every day. On Thursday, we go down to beautiful, sunny Southern California and visit with Terry Joyce for our Southern California scene. She'll have a great guest for us today. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we have Rockin' Thursday for you. And in our Cannabis Conversations, Dan Lynn from Illinois Normal has recently returned from a very important drug conference, and he's here to tell us all about it. All of that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Federal government seeking marijuana growers. The National Institute on Drug Abuse is soliciting proposals from qualified organizations having the capability to, 1, grow, harvest, analyze, store, and distribute GMP-grade cannabis, marijuana, on large and small scales, 2, extract cannabis to obtain purified phytocannabinoids, including delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, analyze and store, 3, prepare marijuana cigarettes and related products, and 4, distribute marijuana, marijuana cigarettes, and cannabinoids, and other related products for research and other government programs upon NIDA authorization. Offerer must possess suitable and secure DEA-approved outdoor and indoor growing facilities, research laboratory with appropriate analytical instruments, and experienced personnel to conduct the project tasks. Appropriate DEA-approved secure facility for manufacturing of marijuana cigarettes and their storage, and DEA Schedule 1 registration for marijuana and THC are essential. NIDA anticipates a 1-year with 4 1-year options cost reimbursement type contract will be awarded. Additional quantity options for manufacturing cigarettes may also be required. In order to handle substances under the Controlled Substances Act of 1970, it is mandatory that offerers possess a DEA research registration for Schedules 2 through 5 and demonstrate the capability to obtain a DEA registration for Schedule 1 controlled substances. All studies must be carried out under pertinent FDA regulations, such as current good clinical practice and current good laboratory practice regulations. Paging Dr. Lyle Craker, please pick up the green courtesy phone. You know, I've got to believe that this is just a mere formality, preceding the rewarding of this contract once again to Dr. Mahmoud El-Soli and the Federal Pot Farm at the University of Mississippi. It all hinges on getting that DEA license to manufacture, process, and study Schedule 1 controlled substances, and the DEA isn't giving those out. But I guess it wouldn't hurt for a few prestigious researchers like Dr. Craker to apply. Can marijuana help alcoholics stay off the bottle? From About.com. In order to stop drinking, some people who have become dependent on alcohol will take the controversial step of substituting the use of marijuana for alcohol, a practice that is known as the Marijuana Maintenance Program. Although the use of marijuana may indeed be less hazardous than heavy drinking, especially to someone who has been drinking excessively for a long period of time, smoking pot comes with its own set of negative effects and consequences. In most jurisdictions, the possession and use of marijuana is illegal. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, marijuana can contribute to mental health problems. Use of marijuana can also have long-term effects on the health of regular users. Smoking marijuana can affect the user's learning and social skills. Long-term marijuana use can affect a smoker's memory and speed of thinking. Also, for those who later decide to quit smoking marijuana, the withdrawal symptoms when they try to quit smoking can be similar to those experienced by people who quit smoking cigarettes. Well, obviously, aside from the marijuana being illegal being a true statement, the rest of those statements were demonstrably false. I have the links to the pertinent studies to back that up at stash.normal.org. But here's what I know. I am the child of an alcoholic. I had my first drinks at age 16. By age 19, I too was an alcoholic. I could drink a case of beer a day. I could drink faster than you. I could drink more than you. My drinking helped me flunk out of college. Me, a 3.44 GPA high school honor student who'd been in gifted and talented programs all my life. At age 22, I had my first puff of a joint. Up to about age 32, I continued to drink more than smoke, but I was no longer chugging beers every day. My drinking was limited to a shot or two, or four or six, at my weekend music gigs. Since age 32, and I'm 41 now, I have drastically increased my marijuana intake, and my drinking now might be a margarita or a glass of wine every other month. Or we could just refer to the work of the late, great Dr. Todd Mikuria. 92 Northern Californians who use cannabis as an alternative to alcohol obtained letters of approval from the author. Their records were reviewed to determine characteristics of the cohort and efficiency of the treatment, which was defined as reduced harm to the patient. All patients reported benefit, indicating that for at least a subset of alcoholics, cannabis use is associated with reduced drinking. The cost of alcoholism to individual patients and society at large warrants testing of the cannabis substitution approach and study of the drug of choice phenomenon. New device claims roadside testing for marijuana within 90 seconds. From Technology Review. Later this year, Philips will introduce a handheld electronic device that uses magnetic nanoparticles to screen for five major recreational drugs. Philips Drug Tester uses a cartridge containing magnetic nanoparticles and a handheld analyzer. Frustrated total internal reflection, or FTIR, is used to detect five major recreational drugs in 90 seconds. The device is intended for roadside use by law enforcement agencies and includes a disposable plastic cartridge and a handheld analyzer. The cartridge has two components, a sample collector for gathering saliva, and a measurement chamber containing magnetic nanoparticles. The particles are coated with ligands that bind to one of five different drug groups, cocaine, heroin, cannabis, amphetamine, and methamphetamine. The test takes less than 90 seconds and can detect drugs at concentrations measured in parts per billion using a single microliter of saliva. The combination of high sensitivity, low sample volumes, miniaturization, speed, and ease of use has raised hopes for a handheld biosensor that could perform sophisticated tests with high accuracy. I will get Paul Armentano on the program to discuss this further. Back in January, he wrote on the subject, because saliva tests detect the presence of THC, not marijuana's inactive metabolites, and have a much more narrow window of detection compared to urinalysis, advocates of the technology believe that it is far more likely than urine testing to provide evidence regarding whether someone may be under the influence of cannabis. The article examined findings in France that saliva testing, quote, fails to detect the recent use of cannabis over 50% of the time, end quote, and that, quote, saliva testing is rarely sensitive to THC beyond 1 or 2 hours after past use, and false positive results are not uncommon, end quote. However, if this is a new technology, those studies may not apply. I'm conflicted about this one. On one hand, one of the biggest obstacles we face in legalization is the fear of stoned drivers. If a technology exists that will accurately detect recent and possibly impairing marijuana use in drivers, that could go a long way in removing that obstacle in the minds of many. However, on the other hand, we're once again confusing the body's chemical composition with a driver's actual impairment. No matter where you set the line, anywhere from 2 to 5 nanograms per milliliter, you will have people who pass the legal threshold, but are actually quite fine to drive. Of course, I suppose you could make that same argument about the 0.08 blood alcohol content in a drinking driver as well. Former Detroit wide receiver, quote, I smoked marijuana every day, end quote. From the Detroit News. Former Michigan State and Lions Charles Rogers talks of getting hooked on prescription pills and admits to a past daily marijuana habit, according to excerpts from an interview for an upcoming segment on ESPN's Outside the Lines. Quote, regularly, yeah, I blew every day, end quote, Rogers tells ESPN and former Detroit Free Press reporter Jamel Hill, answering the question how often he smoked marijuana while in the NFL. Quote, but you know, I was doing something wrong. You can't smoke in the league, so I was wrong, end quote. Rogers was a 2-time All-Big Ten receiver and an All-American in 2002 for the Spartans before the Lions selected him with the number 2 overall pick in the 2003 NFL Draft. A much-hyped selection given his local roots and his hefty contract, he signed a 6-year $55 million deal, Rogers, a Saginaw native, caught 2 touchdown passes in his NFL debut, a 43-24 victory over the Arizona Cardinals on September 7, 2003. That was the high point of a career that fell hard and fell quickly. Rogers missed much of his rookie season with a broken collarbone, then suffered a similar injury early in the 2004 season. But the big blow came in 2005 when he was suspended 4 games for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. He returned from the punishment, but was mostly ineffective, with 9 catches and 1 touchdown in the season's final 7 games. Speaking of that third season, then-Lions president Matt Millen tells ESPN's Hill, quote, he was average. Something clearly was wrong. He looked like a different guy, end quote. GMAT, on your 4-12 2005 team, average would have been spectacular, wouldn't it? And no, I'm not just bitter because one of those 4 wins was on opening day against Green Bay. I hate the headline and tone of this article, which would have you believing that Charles Rogers is a sad case of a talented athlete whose career was ruined by weed. But think about it for a second. Do we think he just started smoking marijuana when he was drafted by Detroit? I doubt it. Instinct tells me he blew every day while he was becoming a 2-time All-Big Ten receiver, All-American, and number 2 overall NFL draft pick. Then he suffers a broken collarbone, a very painful injury, twice in his first 2 years in the league. He uses cannabis, I assume, as part of the pain relief and prescription pills for the rest. Then he's suspended for substance abuse, which has to be the weed, because they won't suspend you for legit prescriptions. So again, I assume, he has to quit the cannabis, but the pain still remains, so he has to keep using the pills, and perhaps more of them, since cannabis tends to moderate the need for opioids. I'm betting that the mind fog from prescription pills, plus the fear of leaping over the middle for the tough catch and getting pegged in that collarbone by Brian Urlacher twice a year, would turn anyone into a different guy.
win people over. You can't just drone on like Ben Stein. You've got to have a little more showmanship. Here, watch.
NormalCon 2009. Yes, we cannabis. September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
I think it's time for a debate, and I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana.
At our 38th annual conference, you'll learn all the facts you need in the debate to legalize marijuana.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President, or waiting until the last minute to book your trip to NormalCon 2009. Early bird registration rates apply until August. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Weed.
That's Ruby Valley, hoo-wee-ha.
Weed. Now it's time for a report from the epicenter of American cannabis culture with our Southern California correspondent. You know her from ComedyNation.com and her appearance as a finalist on season one of NBC's Last Comic Standing. It's our friend, cannabis comedian and marijuana activist, the lovely and talented Terry Joyce. All right, it's time for our Southern California scene with Terry Joyce. Hi, Terry. How are you today?
I'm doing great today, actually.
Oh, so glad to hear it. Always something exciting going on in your life. And today, one of the big stories that's happening is the Los Angeles Plum hearing, the planning and land use management hearing that could decide the fate of a lot of the dispensaries down there. We're going to go to Dejay Kuti from the Patients Advocacy Network here in just a second when we can get her on the line. But before we do, I just wanted to find out what's happening in the world of Terry, and if there's anything you need to tell our listeners about.
Well, there are a few exciting things. One thing is that Dejay actually asked me to help with a campaign for Frank Schefftel. He's running for L.A. City Council in District 2. And the one reason why we're really wanting to give him a lot of support is because not only does he support medical marijuana, but he also is a medical marijuana dispensary owner as well. And so that ought to be a different experience. I'm actually going to all the parties. I'm going to be part of the entourage.
I see.
I'm a good party person.
It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
I have it down to an art form.
I'll bet you do.
So, So I'm really, that'll be a new experience. I really like, who he is and, you know, his ideas and what he represents. And, I kind of owe him because he actually funded some money for us to put the float together. So he gave us a gift. So I have to give back, right?
Well, that's the way we do it here in the cannabis community. We give and give. With regards to this Plum hearing. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
Well, all right. It's my damn show. So. with regards to this Plum hearing that's happening, one of the things about it, and I caught this up on the Stash yesterday, was how the activist Craig X. Rubin and Patrick Duff, I believe is the other person, were advertising that they were going to give away a free eighth of medicine to the first 500 patients who would show up to testify. And I was just wondering what you think of that, ethically or socially.
I think it's, now again, I do like both of these guys. So I'm not saying this in a personal way. I don't like the idea. I think that, we don't go to, Rite Aid and go, hey, you know, if you come out and speak for us, we'll give you, free Prozac. Or Viagra. I mean, I'm trying to figure out which punchline's better.
Probably Viagra.
Viagra. I mean, it's it's manipulation. And I think one of the problems that we have in this fight for medical marijuana is that sometimes we keep our mentality in the gutter. It's like we fight. You know, if we're going to move beyond the stereotype that people who don't agree with us, if we're going to move out of that stereotype, we have to start treating it as if it is a medicine and treating marijuana with a certain amount of respect.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't like the idea of paying people to get involved in the political process either. I figure if your cause is just, people will show up. If people aren't showing up, either you haven't educated them about the cause or the cause isn't just. So, and plus, do you think, I would think it could lead to kind of an arms race. You know, it's like, well, one side will give a free eighth of weed if you say this, but another side will give you a free quarter if you say that. And I don't know. That doesn't sound good to me.
You're just talking high monkeys, basically. You know, you're manipulated into one side to the other side without really, if that's your motivation, if a person's motivation to speak is to get some free weed, do you really want that person to speak?
Yeah, that's a good point there, too. Well, I'm just checking on the line. It looks like DeJay is ready. And we're so excited because you're reporting live here from the Plum hearing, as they call it in Los Angeles. Tell our listeners what that stands for.
Yeah, I'm down here at Los Angeles City Hall, and the Plum Committee is the City Council's Planning and Land Use Management Committee. I've had my friends in San Francisco joke that, wow, there's actually a committee within City Hall that has a cute name. So it's the Plum Committee, and what they're doing today is, as you know, we've got some near 900 medical marijuana dispensaries in the city of Los Angeles that filed a hardship exemption in hopes that they would be able to operate after the interim control ordinance was put in place. And so what's going on today is Plum has 39 dispensaries on a special agenda today. This is the only item that they're discussing. It's just 39 hearings on these dispensaries. And they are going through systematically each one and talking with the operator or their representative, a member from the council office where this dispensary is located, and then taking public comment. One of the things that was kind of interesting today is one of the operators publicly stated that any patients that came to speak at these hearings today, that they would be providing free medication to those patients who came and spoke. And I think they were hoping that this would bring, a large number of patients down to speak. But I don't think it quite had the effect that they wanted. And unfortunately, this is just my opinion, but a dispensary that is doing good by its patients from the day it opens doesn't have a hard time getting patients to come down and speak on its behalf. But when you're talking the 11th hour and now you have to bribe patients with an eighth or a quarter, it seems to me like it's maybe a little too late. The focus and emphasis should have been on the patients long ago, and those patients would have been here. But to have to bribe them, I think, at the last minute shows, it's just an indication to me that there's a little bit of a disconnect.
Yeah, I'd kind of written a little bit about that, kind of the same sentiment. I'd write about people all across this country who are turning out in droves to their state legislatures and their city councils and such, just trying to get medical marijuana, much less trying to, go through these planning and land use, things for what, another 39 dispensaries when you've already got how many? 800, 900?
Yeah, there's, I don't think it's not quite as many as 900 now, because we've had some hearings and some people have shut down and or changed what type of business they were running out of their location, so that numbers dwindled. But yeah, kind of at the peak, we were looking at around 900 or more dispensaries operating, and patients are scared, patients are ill, and so it is difficult to get members out here. I think one of the things that was stated was, oh, we're going to show them, how we do, activism San Francisco style, which in a way to me is a little insulting to San Francisco, because, yeah, San Francisco is very, very good about giving medicine to patients compassionately, but the patients that got out and changed the laws in San Francisco were some of the most ill people in San Francisco, they deserved every bit of the free medicine they got. And they didn't come out to those dispensaries for the free medicine. They came out to those dispensaries because they loved their dispensary.
Sure. And what would you describe as the state of medical marijuana access in Los Angeles? I mean, could it be that enough patients are satisfied at this point that they don't feel the need to come out to these hearings?
I think that one, LA is just kind of its own beast. But I think you're correct. I think one of the most telling things that I had witnessed here in Los Angeles was I was at a DEA raid at a dispensary in the San Fernando Valley, and we were there. We had signs. We were protesting in a very, very peaceful way, and the media let us know that they were coming. And so we knew to kind of hang out with our signs and try to gather more people. The media likes that. And a patient arrived at the dispensary, and we kind of threw our hand up and said, hey, don't go in there. You know, the DEA is in there raiding right now. Come join us. The media is going to come and take some footage of the protest. And without saying a word, body language is everything. The patient looked at the dispensary and kind of pushed his eyebrows together when he saw the people in uniforms. And then he kind of looked at us as protesters standing there with signs. He looked at us kind of puzzled. And then he looked down at his watch and he goes, the dispensary down the street's open. And he went down to that one.
Right.
It was pretty obvious. He could care less there was a raid going on. He could care less about a protest going on to the raid. He just wanted to get to the next open dispensary. And that was an indication to me that if we're going to see patients really rally around the collectives here in Los Angeles, that we're going to have to see an era, unfortunately, where they start cutting them and cutting them and cutting them and cutting them. And once they get to a point where they actually start to shut down our original dispensaries, then maybe patients will go, hey, wait a minute, they're going to take them all away. The other thing that I don't think that the city of Los Angeles realizes is that the number of patients just continues to grow and grow and grow and grow. And despite the fact that we've had upwards of 900 dispensaries in the city, none of them have shut down due to a lack of business. And the big question, of course, that lies within our city officials' minds is, are they operating because there are that many patients, or are they operating because they are serving illegitimate patients? And I think the city is having a hard time believing that this many dispensaries could be serving legal patients all day long. We just don't know. We don't know because there isn't regulations or a strict enough enforcement policy. We don't know how up and up these 900 players are potentially operating.
Wow. Well, DJ Kuti, you're one of the people who has your thumb on the pulse of what's going on there with the patients, with your patients advocacy network. Give out your email or web address again so people can...
Yeah, no, visit us. I've got an update there. I just updated our blog. Our website is cannabissaveslives.com. There's a lot of information there about what the organization does and how to get a hold of us, as well as how you can make a donation. We are 501c3. We only survive off of the kindness of people who want to see medical cannabis legalized.
Excellent. Now, I know you need to get back into the hearing. There's a lot of people testifying.
I'm going to get back into the hearing and see what's going on, and I'll look forward to even updating you further the next time we speak.
All right. Thanks, DJ, for checking in. All right. Thanks a lot to DJ Kuti, and back to Terry here. Terry, before we let you go here, I know you're always performing and doing stuff in the Southern California area, so I wanted to give you this chance to let folks know what's up with you.
Well, you can listen to me on the Damage Report. I was just on Johnny Dam's show yesterday, and that's online now if you want to go ahead and listen to that. He was our guest last week. And really moving forward in putting together a female kind of version of the marijuana log.
Oh, yeah.
That we're underway. And so I'm really excited about that. And we have a lot of opportunities opening up and potential sponsor and stuff like this. So once that gets going, I definitely want to plug that and have our listeners come and see the show.
Oh, yeah. We'll have everybody, all that information up online at stash.normal.org just as soon as you're ready. I'm really looking forward to it, too, because I think one of the things that we need more of in this cannabis community and this activism are women's voices. You know, it was women
yes.
that ended alcohol prohibition. It's going to be women that end marijuana prohibition.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. The prohibition had, alcohol. Yeah, the alcohol prohibition, you know, started in 1919, I think it was, and then, it had gone for quite a long time until Pauline Sabin and some others had formed the, Women's Leagues Against Prohibition or whatever it was called. And 4 years after they had formed, you know, these women's organizations, that's when, prohibition was overturned. So yeah, I really think women can make the difference in this fight.
I do too. I kind of like the fact, I mean, you know, think about marijuana. It's the female plant that actually has the bud.
Right.
Which I think is somewhat symbolic. You know, it's sort of like, oh, okay. I think that, that women do have something to say about marijuana, and it is kind of an interesting voice. And it has been mostly men that have stepped out in terms of comedians and stuff like that, that are really known for being cannabis comedians. And I do kind of, I mean, not that I don't want the show to be funny and wonderful, but I would love to have to where the show actually has a point to it, mm-hmm. where it takes it out of, you know, the mentality that we're talking about, where I'll bribe you to come speak for us because, you know, I'm going to give you some weed, where it's actually like, in some ways, it's informative and inspiring to people, and there's a new way of thinking about something.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
Yeah, and I like you pointing out the female flower, you know, of marijuana. I've always thought it was kind of anti-male, that the bad thing about a bag of weed was stems and seeds. Isn't that kind of anti-male? Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of Normal Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest, Friday, August 28th, here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Rockin' Thursday, and we hear from The Breezeway with their 2008 Global MMA-nominated song, Potfest. This successful band from Tennessee have been recording and performing since 1996. Last year, they toured Europe and played gigs across the U.S. The Breezeway have recently been performing in Nashville with stash favorite Chief Greenbud. To catch the latest of The Breezeway, check out myspace.com/TheBreezewayMusic, and that's music with a K, so myspace.com/TheBreezewayMusic. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Potfest by The Breezeway.
Found a cash machine to fuel the dream and the music. If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our NORML daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
We go to the state of Illinois now, and we're joined by the executive director of Illinois NORML, Dan Lynn. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Hello, Russell. I'm doing well.
Okay. You know, there's been a few things that have been happening around Illinois as far as marijuana law reform, but the one that really caught my eye, I don't know if it was a week ago or a couple weeks ago, where Cook County supported decriminalization. Can you fill us in a bit on that?
Yes. Cook County is the county that the city of Chicago resides in, and up until about 10 days ago, it was still under state law as far as how cannabis possessions were prosecuted, which was 2.5 grams or less. People would still be arrested. But as of about 2 weeks ago, a commissioner came out with legislation trying to allow officers to issue a ticket or arrest subjects with 10 grams or less found in the unincorporated parts of Cook County.
How much of the Chicagoland area is in this unincorporated area?
To be quite honest, the unincorporated parts are very small amounts of Cook County. It's pretty much just the forest preserves and a handful of towns in the county. The idea, though, is that once when the county adopts this ordinance, then the local towns and municipalities can follow suit and adopt an ordinance the same or very similar.
Oh, okay. So this is thereby just leaving some of the discretion up to the individual officers at the time of the arrest?
Yeah, and that's what we've been vocal about in the press, that you know, we're happy to see this approach of giving tickets to these people, but we think it should be uniformly across the board issued tickets and not allowing the officer to arrest somebody if he's having a bad day or give them a ticket if he thinks they deserve to be on their way.
Right. Well, we'll keep our eye on that one there in Cook County. That's a really nice development there. Another major thing is that you recently attended what I guess is the 19th symposium for the International Cannabinoid Research Society. Sounds very scientific. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, this would have been the 19th one that this research society has held, and this was at Pheasant Run Resort in St. Charles, Illinois, and it was very scientific. This was pretty much the big pharmaceutical companies' research being discussed as to cannabinoid medicines, and the event was sponsored by some of, you know, the bigger pharmaceutical companies like Abbott Labs, GW Pharmaceuticals, who you know, has Sativex on the market in other countries. But then some of the other people who were sponsoring this event was the National Institute on Drug Abuse, as well as the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. So this was really a government-funded and pharmaceutical-funded conference to discuss the potential for cannabinoids as medicine.
I guess they haven't been listening to the drug czar lately, because I thought marijuana had no medical value.
Yeah, it was hard to, you know, hold these people you know, serious, because they're doing very scientific work, but then, you know, we have the drug czar saying it has no medical benefit. We have, you know, law enforcement officers lobbying in states that are trying to pass these medical cannabis laws saying it doesn't have any medical benefit. But then we have these huge companies and the federal government dumping lots of money into researching the potential medical benefits of this substance that they claim does not have any medical benefits.
Through the looking glass once again. It's the strangest sort of dichotomy. But looking at these companies and these scientists that are pumping in so much research, what directions are they taking cannabinoid research? Did you find that they've are trying to niche market it to certain conditions, or are they trying to make new delivery devices? What are they looking for?
Well, they're definitely not looking for any like niche market. Like, they're not just treating pain, you know, or going after that. You know, because we know that cannabis can be helpful in treating numerous conditions and a number of different ailments. And, you know, these studies were going after, you know, specific conditions, but all across the board, everything from autism and depression to pain management and liver fibrosis. You know, they were definitely investigating a number of different, you know, avenues to market these medicines, which I would imagine would be synthesized and put into a pill form, like so many of our medications are these days.
So, there was no research or any display of, say, things like vaporizers or like the Sativex spray or anything like that?
No, there was some research presented in those regards. There was one study about, you know, the Health Canada's medical cannabis program and how patients consume it, whether it's vaporization or ingestion. But I would say about 90% of the studies presented were very hardcore scientific data-oriented studies, and then maybe, you know, the other 10% were kind of more social science-based, you know, how are patients using it, how are they reacting to it, are they able to get off of their pharmaceutical drugs when they're taking medical cannabis, and if so, to what degree, but 90% of them, you needed to have a pretty good knowledge of chemistry and the human body anatomy and how it works to understand any of this.
So not exactly your public consumption symposium here. This is really high-level PhD kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, this was not anything like any drug policy reform conference that I had ever been to before, because it wasn't drug policy reform. This was, you know, medical-grade research type of discussions. And you notice that, you know, walking around, because some of the people did kind of stand out as people who would be, you know, favoring just legalization as it is. And then other people are doctors working for pharmaceutical companies or universities whose livelihood depend on getting these grants from the pharmaceutical companies and the government to do this type of research.
Hmm. How about the interaction of the people there at the symposium? Did it have a large crowd, and was there a lot of, you know, discussions aside from the official presentations and such?
There were discussions, you know, aside from, you know, the major presentations and, you know, during the coffee times, you know, people would be chit-chatting. But it was predominantly international-based crowd, for one thing. And then the other, you know, people that were there were, you know, medical students or graduate students engaged in the research presenting these posters and, you know, this research that they'd been working on. But then, you know, some of the meals, you know, I'd be sitting down and talking to some of these graduate students doing the research, and, you know, they're making jokes about frisbee throwing, marijuana smoking hippies, and, you know, kind of having this stance that they're above that because they're engaged in the actual science of why medical cannabis works, whereas the hippies are just trying to protect patients and stop them from being arrested.
Yeah, just something unimportant like that, huh? Jeez. Now, throughout this symposium, you know, Dan, you've been involved in this marijuana law reform for a long time. Did you learn anything new? Did you find anything really shocking or surprising?
Yeah, because, you know, from being involved in the movement and, you know, reading High Times and Grow Books for years, you think you know something about cannabis until you go to this, like, scientific-based, you know, research conference. And, you know, they're talking about CB1 receptors being good for, you know, sedation and appetite stimulation, and CB2 receptors being good for the immune system. And I can kind of follow those, you know, arguments, and I understand that. But when they're talking about, you know, CB2 receptor antagonists for, you know, different chemicals within the brain, then neuroscience is, you know, just beyond my comprehension, and I just try and understand, okay, they're trying to market something for this condition. How did it go? Did they get it, or did it not turn out the way that they wanted it to? And that was, the basic stuff that I could get out of some of these presentations.
Okay. Now, you mentioned it being sponsored by NIDA and the National Alcoholism and Alcohol Abuse people. Did they make any presentations, or was it just strictly a sponsorship?
I believe it was just strictly a sponsorship. A lot of these people concluded their, you know, PowerPoint presentations thanking the people that gave them the grant money. And then other people thanking, you know, there are a lot of thank yous for people who donated the mice that were used in a lot of these studies. So it would have been tough to be there, you know, hearing about what they forced some of these mice to do if you're a PETA member or a real true animal lovers.
Yeah.
Which I love animals, but I understand that, science doesn't, look at them the same way. But there was definitely, a big pharmaceutical trying to find ways to synthesize medicine that will do the same thing that people can grow in their backyard. And, you kind of, at least I did, get this feeling that the longer that the government can hold out in allowing patients to grow their own medicine, the sooner these companies can find a way to market pills that will do the same thing, and they can continue making a lot of money.
Yeah, that's something I fear as well, is that they're just trying to hold back the dam from bursting until they can, you know, lock down the money side of things to make it benefit them as best they can. Well, Dan, fascinating topic here as far as this this symposium goes. So I would imagine, at least from, well, we know how NIDA feels about this issue, but from the scientists you talked to there and the people you met, do you get any feeling for their position on whole plant cannabis?
I think that a lot of them, you know, truly believe that, you know, this medicine can help people in the whole plant form, and that sick people right now should not be arrested and prosecuted for, you know, just trying to feel healthy. But, because their livelihood depends on, you know, a big company somehow profiting from doing the same thing that that plant can do, only it has to be done by the pill form, they kind of have a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
But most, people are good natured and they want to, get this medicine to the sick people who truly need it. And, they're only, working because they need to pay the bills just like the rest of us.
Hmm. Well, we'll keep our eye on that. And thank you so much for reporting on that from that event. I imagine it couldn't have been the most exciting event at times to be at. So we appreciate your perseverance. Dan Lin is the executive director of Illinois Normal. Check them out at illinoisnormal.org. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thanks, Radical Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder that Seattle Hemp Fest is coming up next weekend, 15th and 16th of August. All you volunteers in the Seattle area who want to help me out at the Hemp Fest, make sure you send me an email at stash@normal.org with the headline, Seattle Hemp Fest Volunteer. I've got plenty of work. We've got flyers to hand out for Normal Show Live. We've got audio and video and photography that needs to be done. And we need your help for collecting some donations for the promotions for Normal Show Live. So you volunteers, please let me know. Part of your reward for volunteering will be some fine Normal swag and an opportunity to get backstage at Hemp Fest, which is lots of fun. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.